Imagine walking into like the most high-stakes interaction of your month. You know, the kind of room where budgets are approved or major negotiations are settled.
Right, the real pressure cooker
Yeah,
moments.
exactly. But instead of frantically reviewing your slide deck or, I don't know, chugging coffee in the hallway, you spent the last 10 minutes completely silent, filling out a mundane spreadsheet or playing a game of Othello.
Which, to be fair, sounds completely counterintuitive. I mean, maybe even irresponsible to some people.
Yeah, it really does.
Because most professional advice, it centers on building that external armor, right? We're taught to memorize the data, anticipate the objections, polish the presentation.
Make sure the tie is straight, all that.
Right. But very few strategies actually focus on the physiological and mental state of the person wearing that armor into the room.
And that is exactly why we are here today. Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we are unpacking this fascinating internal document that addresses really that exact missing piece.
It's a really unique source we've got today.
It is. We're looking at this highly intriguing set of personal notes from a Brian Withers meeting. And these are dated April 3rd, 2026. And they're specifically labeled Session 1 of 4.
Yeah, and to be clear, the mission here today isn't to dissect like marketing strategies or revenue targets.
No, not at all.
Instead, we're decoding what is essentially a psychological blueprint for how to master your personal energy and your mindset before you ever step foot in a room.
Because if you're listening to this and you're prepping for a stressful meeting, or maybe you're trying to improve your communication or just get a mental edge, these notes hold a literal blueprint for projecting the perfect professional energy.
They really do. It's basically a masterclass in internal preparation. It isolates that human element of professional interaction, which, let's face it, is often the most volatile variable in any meeting.
Oh, 100%. The human element is the wild card. So let's jump right into the source material. The notes start off with this concept the author calls peaceful expectation.
I love that phrase. Same. The instruction is to maintain high energy, but to make sure that energy remains, they use the word smooth. They specifically pair the phrases high energy and high vibration, but peaceful.
Right.
But I want to pause there because we need to ground this terminology. A phrase like high vibration can easily sound a little mystical, like vague wellness jargon.
Yeah, it can sound very crystal healing for sure.
Right. So in a rigid corporate context, what does high vibration actually translate to?
Well, in this context, vibration is just your literal physiological baseline.
Okay.
It's your heart rate, the tension in your facial muscles, your micro expressions, the cadence of your speech, all of
The
that.
physical stuff.
Exactly. And when someone has a high physiological baseline, but they lack control over it, they just become erratic.
Oh, yeah.
And the notes actually warn against being frantic or on the edge. They explicitly caution against waving over people and overwhelming them.
We have all seen that happen. We've all been in that room. Oh, absolutely. You've witnessed someone enter a meeting and they're so desperate to dominate the space or, you know, prove their value that they just physically and verbally flatten the room.
Yes, they're talking too loud, they're not pausing.
Right. And they think it's enthusiasm, but that high vibration is actually just anxiety masquerading as enthusiasm.
That makes total sense. As I was reading this, I pictured the difference between like a beautifully calibrated shot of artisanal
Okay, I like where this is going.
and someone who just chugged three neon-colored energy drinks from a gas station.
Oh, that is a perfect analogy.
Right, because both substances provide energy. But the energy drink creates this chaotic, vibrating, frantic state where you literally are waving over people and talking a mile a minute.
You're just jittery.
Exactly, jittery.
Huh.
But the espresso is potent, but it's refined. It provides intense focus, but the delivery is smooth and clear.
And the key to that espresso metaphor is the container.
How do you mean?
Well, a shot glass is built to handle the pressure of the espresso machine without shattering, right? So the notes argue that to achieve this smooth delivery, your energy has to be anchored in what they call strength and clarity.
Strength and clarity.
Right. You are trying to thread the needle between being highly engaged and maintaining absolute calm. And the author describes achieving this balance as creating an ebb and flow.
Okay, see, that specific directive to ebb and flow, that is where I see a massive potential trap.
A trap. How so?
Well, if my goal is to project strength and clarity, how do I ebb and flow without coming off as totally erratic to the other people in the room?
Ah, I see what you mean.
Right. Like if I'm constantly shifting gears between calm and energetic throughout a pitch, I risk looking inconsistent, like I don't have my emotional footing.
Well, you would certainly look inconsistent if you were swinging between emotional extremes, like if you're shouting one minute and whispering the next.
Which would be terrifying.
Right, that's erratic. But the ebb and flow described here, it's about dynamic pacing. And it's grounded by that constant baseline of strength.
Okay, give me an example of that.
Think of a seasoned trial lawyer.
Oh, okay.
When they are delivering a critical piece of evidence to the jury, the energy flows up. Their projection increases, their pacing quickens, maybe their gestures get sharper.
They command the space.
Exactly. But then, when the opposing counsel speaks, or when the judge interrupts them, they immediately ebb back into this calm, centered, listening posture.
Oh, I see.
They do not stay at a 10 out of 10 for the entire hour. Remaining at a 10 is exactly how you end up waving over people, like the notes warn against.
So the strength is in the control of the dial.
Perfectly said.
Mm-hmm.
The strength lies in the deliberate control of the dial, not just leaving the volume maxed out and breaking the knob off.
Okay, I love that. So the espresso energy, the controlled dial, it sounds ideal in theory.
It does.
But let's introduce a dose of reality here.
Let's do it.
If I just stepped out of a screaming match with a vendor, or, you know, I've spent the last 3 hours fighting absolute fires in my inbox, my brain is not brewing espresso.
No, definitely not. It is flooded with cortisol. I am in full-blown energy drink mode. So how do these notes suggest bridging the gap between a chaotic, stressful morning and this magical state of peaceful expectation?
Well, the author completely acknowledges this exact physical reality.
Good.
Because recognizing the need for balanced energy is completely useless if you don't have a mechanism to actually achieve it.
Right. You can't just tell someone to be calm.
Exactly. Yeah. So to let go of what the notes call an energy frenzy, the very first step is environmental and literal. The notes say, close the door.
Just literally close the door.
Literally. You have to establish a physical boundary, but the subsequent cognitive step is much, much more demanding.
Okay.
The notes state you must detach and get those thoughts archived. And to facilitate this, they recommend using what they call a focus task.
Now, this is the part of the notes that completely threw me. The list of recommended focus tasks is wildly specific.
It really is an interesting list.
It's bizarre. The author suggests a Rubik's Cube, playing a video, listening to music, playing the board game Othello.
Yeah, all very distinct activities.
And then, tucked right in there, they suggest, quote, some kind of spreadsheet work or something.
Yep.
Okay, I have to push back hard on the spreadsheet inclusion here.
I figured you might.
I mean, if my brain is swimming in stress from putting out fires, diving into rows and columns of data feels like pouring gasoline on the anxiety.
It sounds like more work.
Yes. Why would doing more work help you calm down and detach from an energy frenzy?
It feels incredibly counterintuitive, I agree, until you look at how the brain actually allocates processing power.
Okay, explain that.
So when you are in an energy frenzy, your mind is juggling like a dozen abstract, unresolved, and highly emotional problems all at once.
Yeah, spin a bunch of plates.
Exactly. It's very similar to a computer running way too many heavy background applications. The fan is spinning lightly, the system is lagging, the battery is draining fast.
You know that sound.
Right. So a spreadsheet requires intense, localized, and strictly logical focus. You are inputting specific numbers into specific cells to achieve a predetermined mathematical sum.
It's very linear.
Highly linear. By forcing your brain to engage in a highly structured, rigid task, whether that's the spatial puzzle of a Rubik's Cube, or calculating moves in Othello, or balancing a spreadsheet, you are basically running a heavy diagnostic scan.
Yeah.
The task demands 100% of your logical processing unit.
Wow. So it literally leaves no cognitive bandwidth for the emotional, frantic thoughts. It just forces the brain to suspend those background applications.
Precisely. The spreadsheet is not work in the sense of open-ended, anxiety-inducing problem solving. It's a closed loop.
A closed loop. That's a great way to put it.
Yeah, it's a predictable, controllable environment that acts as a palate cleanser for your cognitive load.
Okay, that actually makes sense now.
You break the loop of the frenzy because your brain physically cannot calculate a complex formula and simultaneously panic about an ambiguous client email. It just can't do both. So once the focus task is done, the frenzy is archived.
And the notes actually pose a really practical question right after this. They asked, how much time will it take regarding this transition ritual?
Right, which is what everyone wants to know.
Exactly. But if we're using this mechanism to archive thoughts, The amount of time probably depends on the severity of the frenzy, right? It's not like a strict 5-minute rule on the clock.
No, definitely not.
You're waiting for that physiological shift.
Yeah, the metric for success here isn't time. It is the successful archiving of the previous mental state. You are trying to create a hard, impenetrable break between the chaos of the day and the specific interaction you are about to have.
Okay, so that brings us to the next phase of the blueprint. We close the door, we've played Othello, or balance the spreadsheet.
The background apps are closed.
Exactly. The frantic thoughts are archived. The physical space is secured. How do we prep our attitude for the actual human beings we are about to face?
Well, this is the pivot from defensive management to proactive reality creation.
Okay.
The notes instruct going to what they call a vibrational understanding.
There's that word again.
Yep. And you achieve this by preparing your mindset ahead of time with a very deliberate line of internal questioning.
Right. And the author lists the specific prompts they ask themselves. Things like, what do I like? What kind of service? And then they start feeding themselves highly affirming statements.
Real positive reinforcement.
Yeah, they write, these are good people. I love connecting with people. I always get a good result. It's this active framing of the upcoming social dynamic.
Exactly. They are flat out refusing to leave their physiological and emotional state to chance.
They're taking control.
They're not waiting to see if the client is in a good mood to determine their own posture. They pre-decide the nature of the interaction. And the absolute pinnacle of this preparation is the specific technique the notes mention next.
The future casting.
Yes. The notes read, future cast meeting with outcomes I want.
Okay. I really want to dissect the mechanics of future casting, because discussing it conceptually is very different from actually executing it at your desk.
Very true.
When I read future cast, I instantly think of elite sports psychology.
Oh, like visualization.
Exactly. Like an Olympic diver standing on the edge of the platform. They close their eyes, and they visualize every single twist, the rotation, the perfect splashless entry before they ever move a muscle.
Right. They're priming their neurological pathways.
Exactly. But how does a professional actually apply that to, like, a Tuesday morning business meeting? What are they physically doing at their desk?
They are sitting quietly and visualizing the micro interactions of the upcoming hour. You don't just imagine a vague sense of victory. You visualize the firm handshake. You visualize the specific tone of voice you're going to use when the client inevitably raises a difficult objection.
Getting really granular of it.
Highly granular. You physically practice letting your shoulders drop and taking a deep breath before you answer that objection in your mind. You are rehearsing your emotional regulation.
See, I hear that, but I have a huge question here.
Let's hear it.
Does visualizing a perfect outcome make us brittle?
Brittle?
Yeah. Like, if I sit at my desk and I future cast this flawless, highly collaborative meeting, and then I walk into the room and the client immediately goes off script, like they just start yelling.
Right.
Doesn't my future cast shatter? Doesn't that leave me way more vulnerable and stunned than if I had just walked in ready for a fight?
That is a brilliant point, and that is exactly the danger if you use future casting to script the other person's behavior. But effective future casting, as framed by this whole goal of strength and clarity, it's about scripting your own physiological response to the environment.
Okay, wait, say more about that.
You visualize yourself handling the unexpected with that peaceful expectation. You visualize the client pushing back, maybe even getting heated, and you visualize yourself maintaining your smooth energy.
So you're prepping for the chaos, but prepping your calm reaction to it.
Yes. You are priming your nervous system for resilience, not rigidity. If you walk into a room having already rehearsed a grounded, collaborative posture, your body language naturally aligns with that expectation.
You aren't going in defensive.
Exactly. You have already answered the internal question, I always get a good result.
Wow. It is a highly engineered, self-fulfilling prophecy.
It really is.
You use the focus task to clear the chaos, you future cast to set your physiological destination, and then you step into the room. It sounds like an airtight system.
It does sound foolproof.
Yet the notes reveal one final, very significant internal hurdle. Because even with the perfect energy balance, the archived thoughts, and this positively future-casted mindset, the author points out a glaring vulnerability.
Because preparation alone cannot erase human history.
Nope.
The final line of these notes provides this profound piece of professional self-reflection. It highlights the internal conflict that happens the very moment you actually sit down at the table.
Okay, let me read it exactly as it is written in the notes, because it's a lot. The author states, "My own shadow self is the customer service, and my new self is still dealing with this.
Yeah.
This is a dense, somewhat cryptic admission. Let's really pull this apart. What does it mean that the shadow self is the customer service?
Well, in psychological terms, the shadow self represents the parts of our personality or our conditioned responses that operate beneath our conscious ideal.
Like our default settings.
Exactly. These are our default defense mechanisms. So if we consider the context of everything we have discussed so far, the pursuit of calm, strength, and clarity, we have to ask what the opposite of that looks like for this specific author.
Right. And when I think of a stereotypical customer service mode in a corporate environment,
yeah,
it is highly reactive.
Oh, totally.
It's this energy of scrambling to please someone, over-apologizing for minor inconveniences, and just bending over backwards to accommodate demands, regardless of how unreasonable they might be.
Just frantically trying to smooth things over.
Yes. It is the exact opposite of grounded authority.
You are describing the conditioned reflex of so many professionals. Corporate culture often teaches us that keeping the client happy at all costs equates to safety.
Definitely. The customer is always right.
Right. We develop a fear of conflict, and we equate compliance with professionalism. The author is realizing here that their default ingrained habit, their shadow self, is to slip into this overly accommodating, highly reactive panic mode.
So the customer service shadow self is the part of them that desperately want to wave over people with accommodations just to avoid any tension in the room.
Yes.
They just abandon the peaceful expectation the second someone frowns.
Exactly. And the realization here is that achieving a vibrational understanding is not just a one-time magic trick you perform at your desk.
Right.
It is an active, ongoing negotiation with your own conditioned behaviors. The new self is the one that played Othello to clear their mind, the one that future casted a strong collaborative outcome. But the moment the meeting begins, that new self has to actively parent the shadow self.
Oh, wow. So it's literally an internal tug of war right there in the boardroom.
Yeah, happening in real time.
You have to notice the urge to over-apologize, pause, and actively choose the smooth espresso-like energy instead.
Exactly.
And acknowledging that the shadow self exists and knowing exactly what it looks like, in this case, frantic customer service, that's the only way to prevent it from taking the wheel.
It brings the entire document full circle. You cannot just desire to be calm. You must identify the specific behavioral loop that tries to pull you back into chaos.
That's powerful.
It is. That level of self-awareness transforms this from a simple checklist into a really profound leadership practice.
It really does. So let's pull all the way back and look at the whole blueprint we've extracted from session one of the Brian Withers meeting notes. The architecture for mastering personal energy before a high-stakes interaction is remarkably clear here.
It is. And it begins with defining the target. Cultivating a state of peaceful expectation where your energy is high, but the delivery is exceptionally smooth.
Right, the espresso.
Yes. You avoid the frantic urge to wave over people by anchoring your presence in strength and clarity, allowing your energy to dynamically ebb and flow based on the needs of the moment.
And next is that transition ritual. You acknowledge the cortisol and the chaos of the day by physically closing the door.
Setting a boundary.
Right. Then you utilize a highly structured, focused task, be it a Rubik's Cube, a game of Othello, or yes, even a complex spreadsheet to monopolize your logical processing power. This forces the brain to suspend and archive the frantic thoughts, creating a clean cognitive slate.
And from that clean slate, you engage in proactive future casting. You prime your mindset with positive reinforcement, affirming that you are dealing with good people and expecting a good result.
I always get a good result.
Right. You visualize your own calm, regulated physiological responses to the upcoming interactions.
And finally, you identify your specific shadow self. You recognize the ingrained reactive habits, like slipping into an over-accommodating customer service mode that threaten your grounded authority. And you actively manage that shadow self throughout the interaction.
It completely shifts the paradigm from merely surviving an encounter to consciously engineering your impact on the room.
Which leaves us with a final lingering consideration regarding how we navigate our daily professional lives.
Oh, what's that?
Well, the notes place immense weight on finding a mechanism to detach and get thoughts archived. They demand that we close the door and take the time for a focused task to let go of the energy frenzy.
Right. It's non-negotiable for them.
Exactly. So the question you have to ask yourself is this. If you do not actively carve out that time to clear the cognitive deck between tasks, what are the consequences?
So this is a scary thought.
Are you inevitably dragging your unarchived frustrations and your frantic shadow self into every single interaction you have? Consider how many unresolved thoughts you are currently carrying around and how deeply they might be watering down your own strength and clarity. Because if you want to project that perfectly calibrated, smooth energy, you cannot brew it using yesterday's chaos.